Yeah, now the verse that you're talking about is I'm not sure which one. There's a verse that's written here called Yogas Chitta Vritti Nirodha. There is a I'm not sure if that phrase Yogas Chitta Vritti Nirodha, it's normally translated as yoga is the restraint of mental modifications. And so the challenge is to translate it and understand it. You can say the word the critical issues are, of course, what is restraint and what is chitta vritti is the key. Chitta is usually considered mental process, mental contents of mental activity. Nirodha is sort of ending or cessation, which could be translated as restraint. Yes, you see, if we put it into a Buddhist context, which I think is just fine, awakening or complete liberation, in like nirvana or arahan, the state of completed fourth stage adept, complete and perfect enlightenment, is living in the deathless. Now, Gautama obviously was able to think and speak, therefore had what we would call consciousness and mental modifications, meaning thinking. Based in consciousness, but was considered liberated. It is not that mind activity obviously is no longer possible. It's that there's liberation from ignorance and grasping, which means there's no more believing in the illusory. That's the ending of ignorance. And there's no more grasping or raga or thirst for becoming. These end together. So, grasping, aversion, and basic ignorance are associated with the ending of desire or freedom from the thirst for becoming or the thirst for non-becoming or thirst, which is tanha in Buddhism. Thirst leads to clinging, leads to the three poisons or grasping, aversion, ignorance. So there's freedom from thirst and there's freedom from illusion. That's the ending of ignorance. And the ending of self-conceit, eighth fetter, or ahamkara, selfhood, identity, or relative sense of self, and restlessness that it depends upon. Now, yet there's still the free function of mind available, but it's a mind that doesn't no longer sees the impermanent as permanent, no longer sees the insubstantial as substantial, no longer sees the stressful as in, un, as fine and easy or good, goodly or comfortable. So free from the three poisons, grasping, aversion, ignorance, is free from thirst. Thirst for sensuality, thence thirst for becoming in mind, thirst for non-becoming or dissolution. Ending of mind process or bliss or something. Those forms of thirst are gone, and the believing in illusion or not perceiving, not knowing the three marks, that ignorance is gone too. Meaning, what is impermanent is seen as impermanent, what is insubstantial is seen as such, and what is stressful is seen as such. What is it that is associated with those three marks? In what is, what what is it in experience, or how is experience based in the three marks? Meaning the fashioning of mind experience, right? We make our experience. How is that a manifestation of the three marks, meaning it's impermanent, all our experience is impermanent and insubstantial and stressful? It's because it's based on continued consciousness and samskara, meaning mental activity like citta, citta vritti, or mental modifications, meaning what appears to be multiple elements, what appears to be sequential process in mind, is over. And so it's sort of analogous to Ra talking about the difference between what real balance is. Now, Ra talking about balance, or you know, initiation of mind body spirit, healing and balance of mind body spirit, or initiation of mind body spirit, saying that, you know, the fully balanced entity has no emotional charge. For the fully balanced entity, no situation has emotional charge. And Ra explained that that's not the same as being unswayed, or, you know, being non-attached or non-grasping as emotional charge comes and goes. It's no longer generating an emotional charge, living unswayed. It's no sway in mind, which means no restlessness. Now, the first stage is to become, to balance distortions. The second stage is freedom from distortions arising, and they're different. And so, initially, the work is to internalize the polarity of your dimension. When you find when you find impatience, find the corresponding patience, which just means when we get stuck in something, realize that we could be unstuck too. Or when we're stuck in anger, realize that we could have goodwill. Or stuck in sorrow means we could have faith and trust. Or stuck in fear, we could also have faith or confidence. But it's not that simple, of course. It's moving back to balance when we generate emotional charge, which is in distortion and imbalance. After that, eventually, there's no longer arising at all of emotional charge or distortion, and that's akin to the cessation of mental modifications, which is different than the restraint of mental modifications. At the end of the path, one is actually free from consciousness and mental modifications as well. You know, citta vritti could be seen as analogous to samskara, the fourth skanda. Samskara meaning fashionings, mental, cognitive, conceptual fashioning in mind. Mind fashioning a defined, experience. Mind fashioning experience means by perception and conception, we make a certain experience, right? Like, I'm angry, or I'm sad, or I'm confused, or I have a path. And so, all of that fashioning, fabrications, volitional compounds, all of these are different words for samskara, fourth skanda. That is very much akin to citta vritti, or mental modifications, or activity of citta. Now, Nityananda, I'm not finished with the path, so I can't speak fully to the end of the path. But the end of the path is a cessation of all vritti, it seems to me. Meaning, there's no longer emotional charge even arising. It's not that one even needs to balance it or be okay with the stuff that comes up and make peace with your distortions and face your shadow. There's no more shadow. So first we need to face the shadow. If we fully face the shadow, eventually there's no more shadow. There's no more obscuration. There's no more clinging, grasping. There's no more emotional reactivity. Therefore, there's no place that obscures light. There's no object obscuring free light passage. And so the crystallized entity is translucent, is fully non-diffractive, full regularization of the chakra energies of the seven centers means there's no place for a shadow to form. There's no ignorance, there's no grasping, or no thirst. Thirst doesn't even arise. And ignorance, therefore, has no... there's no blind spot. That, of course, goes to omniscience, meaning know-it-all, or, you know, all-knowing. Now, I'm not at that level, of course. So, initially, yes, we need to love and make peace and accept and understand, right? It's all the same. Face the shadow. That facing means be willing to allow, feel the pain, see the truths, the bitter truths we don't want to, the truths that we feel are bitter, we don't want to face, to allow them to rise into consciousness and be aware of them, and the emotional charge that we'd rather not feel, to allow it in the body, in the mind, visceral process, and pain in mind, to be as it is, and then to increasingly accept it and understand it, take responsibility, and move to forgiveness. That's just the first stage. That's healing distortions, or healing. Eventually, there's no longer an arising of all of that citta, vritti. There's no longer and Gautama was saying that all five skandhas are born of ignorance. Even consciousness is born of ignorance. Now, chit could be called consciousness. Yeah, you see, there are many ways to look at it, okay? There are many translations for these words. And the only one who knows the correct translation is somebody who is complete and perfectly enlightened. And I'm not. And so, you can say, you have to be careful. You cannot say, chit is consciousness. Because here, chit is translated as mental process. Okay? So, citta vritti nirodha. Citta vritti, translated as mental modifications, you will find it in another place, translated as consciousness. In Buddhist view of the five skandhas, there's a difference between fourth and fifth skandhas, samskara and vijnana, or consciousness. Meaning, there's a difference between the fashioning activity function of mind, samskara, fabrications, volitional compounds, will-based, composite, fashioned conceivings, and consciousness, the fifth skandha, which is vijnana. And so if you call citta consciousness, then where do we have, you know, what's the analog to samskara, to the fourth skandha, samskara? So, you know, be careful. But it seems to me that there is the activity and function of mind, and then there's the basic sentience of mind. And so the activity of mind is perception and conception. The basic sentience of mind is consciousness. Again, you know, everybody has their own view. So in my view, which is different than other views, there is function, there is the function of mind, which is perceiving and conceiving, which is the third and the fourth skandhas in Buddhism. Perceptions of body, bodily sense perceptions, and mind activity perception, and the fourth skandha, samskara, which is the fashioning of mind activity, or mind activity fashioning, conceiving. Then there's the structure of mind, or the basic sentience of mind, or mind as a field that may be transformed, and that's consciousness. But it's still a form of clinging, or born of ignorance, and so at the end of the way, at the end of the path, there's no longer an arising of samskara and consciousness. So freedom, you know, complete and perfect enlightenment in Buddhism is not a restraint of citta vritti. It's the cessation of the arising of citta vritti. There's no existent, there's no longer an arising of citta vritti or mental modifications or mind activity. But yes, the Buddha could think and talk, so what is that? Well, all we can say is that for him, that activity is different than how it would be for us. Obviously, you can say that he must have some mental activity if he's able to formulate teaching and speak. Maybe so, I guess so, but it would be more of, I would say, expression of gnosis rather than fashioning of ideas. And so, but at the end of the way, mental modifications don't arise, conceivings or fashionings, fabrications don't arise, emotional charge doesn't arise, and even consciousness is born of ignorance, so consciousness doesn't arise. And that's why sometimes we have the difference between the terms consciousness and awareness. But in Buddhism, the last three fetters don't talk about consciousness. The last three fetters, the ten fetters, talk about the ending of self-conceit, the ending of restlessness, and the ending of basic ignorance or avidya. Now, where's consciousness? Not there. Why? Because I think the idea is that with the arising of that the formation of self-conceit, which is based on restlessness, is the nature of consciousness. Consciousness is intrinsically dualistic because it's intrinsically indicative of the mind differentiating a subject and an object. I'm conscious of that. Like Ra has the consciousness of unity. They're experiencing unified self. They're still fashioning experience. They're fashioning the experience of unity or non-duality or unified self because they're not yet free from fashioning. They're not yet free from consciousness. They're not out of sixth density. They're not yet forever. They still have memory, Ra said. In seventh density, they'll have no more memory. So, initially, again, the work would be called a restraint of that which is harmful, or restraint of, you know, to say the restraint of mental modifications. Yoga means, the Sanskrit root of yoga is yog, or yuk, which means to yoke, Y-O-K-E, to restrain. So that's yoga as restraint, as a yoking, like yoking the ox with you know, a harness or something. That is ultimately associated with samadhi rather than control. And so the way to restraint that's not based on control and grasping would be the way to non-arising of citta vritti or samskara. And so in samadhi, there's one-pointedness, calm abiding, concentration, equanimity, focused mind, awareness without grasping. That itself is a restraint of mental modifications or mental activity. But it isn't the ending of consciousness. And so the ending of consciousness, or seeing that consciousness itself, or dualized awareness, which is consciousness, which is subject-object, or relationality. We talk about this many times. To me, that, you know, and Ramana Maharshi says, you know, with ahamkara comes the creation of the world, meaning the outer world is born along with the arising of a sense of self. Because the sense of self is an identification process. I'm here, you're there. I'm here, and everything else is over there. There's here and there. There's me and you. There's this and that. That's differentiation. That's actually fashioning experience. But that's based on consciousness, but it's different than... it's a fashioning based on consciousness. But at the end of the way, even consciousness is seen as a fashioning. And so... that's why in Buddhism the term samskara, which is, again, fashioning, fabrication, composite, volitional compounding of conceiving. That term is not only the fourth skanda or a mind function, but it's also a description of all dharmas, all dhammas, all that appears to be an individual entity or thing. People, places, and things, material objects, energy fields, anything that can be differentiated is also a samskara, meaning it's composite and it's ultimately a fabrication or a fashioning. And it's illusory also. It's insubstantial, it's anatta also. And so even consciousness is a fabrication based on ahamkara or self-conceit and restlessness. And so with the ending of, you see, when these things are realized fully, I assume, they no longer even arise. Meaning the entity is not even fashioning self-conceit because there's no restlessness. And therefore, it's the cessation of the whole five skanda set. There's no more consciousness. There's only unlimited awareness. So we have to be careful how we use words. So let me see your question here. Is yoga also union? Well, yoga is theory and practice, right? Yoga as a system is a theory, set of theories or views, and a set of practices, which are the application of those theories towards a goal called moksha or liberation or self-realization, Ramana Maharshi would say, or mukti, or complete and perfect enlightenment, or the union of Atman and Paramatman, as Nityananda would say, or becoming one with God, or becoming one with all, or freedom from all limitation, return to source. So yoga, then, is a system of theory and practice, whose goal is freedom from ignorance and suffering, and the cessation of all becoming. The standard translation for chitta vritti is mental modifications. Look at what various great teachers have said chitta is. I mean, Nityananda has something to say about chitta also. And so he knows chitta vritti. He talks about that. and so if you say that chitta is consciousness, then you can say what? Yoga is the restraint of activity of consciousness? Well, that might be confusing. But to say mental modifications or chitta as mental activity or fluctuation, mental flashing, mental vibration, that is not the same as consciousness because it's thought forming. You know, there's a difference between consciousness and thought form. Thought form is, in my understanding, closer to citta, mental activity, mental functioning, while consciousness is, to me, the basic sentient function. And again, in Buddhism, which has to be brought in, there is a difference. The mind is divided into three functions, or there are three skandhas of the five skandhas that are particularly related to mind: perception, samskara, and consciousness. So there again is a difference between a mental fashioning function activity, samskara, fourth, and consciousness, fifth, which, and see, Hindus also have the word consciousness or vijnana. So what's, ask a Hindu teacher, what's the difference between citta and vijnana? Vijnana is translated as consciousness, and citta is not. Nityananda actually translated as chidakash. Chidda, C-H-I-D-A, same as C-I-T-T-A, same as C-H-I-T, same as C-H-I-T-T-A. So, you gotta look at those things. Nityananda had a whole, in awakening song, or many, actually, it's many utterances from deep samadhi, that were compiled to be called the Chidakash Gita. Chidakash is chitta, akasha, or mental modification space, or mind space, or heart space. Chittakasha was called the heart space in the head. Alright? So, there are many different views and translations. So, thanks everybody. Have a good night. Take good care of yourselves, and see you next time. Bye-bye.